Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Sun Guy Nation, welcome to the show here on another Friday afternoon. Some show notes if you're looking for some wrestling in the next couple of days. Tonight, WCWO running in the Outlaw Arena in Indianapolis, Indiana, as usual. SCW running a free show at La Poblanitas in Bremerton tonight. The NWA in Franklin, Kentucky. RCW in Catonsville, Maryland, featuring Casey Carlisle, whom I love. MCW in Joppa, Maryland. Evolve in Ybor City, Florida. And the NWA running tonight in Decatur, Indiana. Tomorrow night, All-Star Pro Wrestling running a special benefit show at the Skyline Theater in Shelbyville, Indiana. It's a fundraising event with multiple activities, including wrestling. Tomorrow night in Bluefield, West Virginia, West Virginia Championship Wrestling featuring first time ever Casey Carlisle versus Kelly Klein. ECCW in Port Coquitlam, BC. CCW in Opa-locka, Florida. FEW in Clewiston, Florida. CZW in Townsend, Delaware. MMWA in St. Louis, Missouri. GFW in Keyport, New Jersey. UWC in Wrightstown, New Jersey. SWAC in Concord, North Carolina. NWA in Gray, Tennessee. UEW in Eastridge, Tennessee. EPW in Montvale, Virginia, and TWE tomorrow night in Behala, Mississippi. So get out there, support your local independent wrestling promotions, wherever they may be today and tomorrow. Lots going on. I believe we have with us our guest today. He is great ring announcer, Mike Allen, and a QT. I will let you lead this thing off for us.
Well, thank you, Sunday. Yes, we do have Mike Allen on today, and I've worked with Mike Allen, and all I can say is I describe this man as a Renaissance man. I do work with Mike on Armed Radio Global, a podcast that Mike runs a switchboard. Mike, we have a standard first question we ask all our guests. How did you get started in this crazy business of wrestling?
Well, I was a fan. First of all, thanks for having me on the show. And I'm glad every Wednesday I'm able to work the switchboard for you there, West Coast.
Yes.
I was a fan of wrestling back in the 80s and, of course, the 90s and the Attitude Era. Kind of got away from it with kids and family and just doing other things, and kind of got away and came back to it when I started my ring announcing career. And of course, you got to start somewhere. And so the local promotions around Austin, Texas, and in Texas, I started putting my name out there, got picked up by the Texas Wrestling Federation first, and had a couple other promotions I announced for pro wrestling, and then from that led to MMA and boxing, and now I do MMA and boxing.
Now, I'd like to tell
started out as a fan.
Oh, well, I'd like to tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil fans that when I am on the air with Mike Allen on Wednesdays, I'm known as West Coast Dan. Yes. All right. Well, Mike, can you tell us if you had an athletic background in high school?
In high school, I played football, ran track, wrestled. And then in the military, when I was stationed in Germany, I extended my football career, and I played for the German National Football League for a number of years.
Yes, now, Mike, with professional with professional wrestling and pretty much all sports, concussion has raised its head in these mm-hmm. years, the concussions. Can you tell us if you had any concussions when you were playing in the service football over in Europe?
The only time I was ever had a concussion and the only time I ever lost memory was playing for the Monheim Sharks. It was the first game back after the Gulf War, the 91 Gulf War. And we had been deployed for the first half of the season. We came back. We were playing against the Hamburg Silver Eagles. And on the kickoff, I got ear holed. Anybody that plays football, ear hole is a blindside block where you don't see it coming, and the guy sticks his face right in your ear hole. So that knocked me for a loop.
Wow. All right. Well, Mike, I was reading an article about King Kong Bundy. In high school, he also played football, and he weighed 350 pounds in his senior year. I'm going to guess you probably weighed more than you ever heard of a trim, 248 pounds.
I was 210 pounds, actually, back in high school.
Oh, okay.
It was all lean muscle. When you wrestle and you swim all summer and you're active and, you know, your metabolism of a teenager, then you don't pack on the pounds.
Oh, well, I thought only field goal kickers had lean, hard muscle. That was it.
No, I was a lean dude, man. I played at 235.
Wow, very nice. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Well, Mike, when you were stationed in the Army, you were stationed at Fort Lewis, very close to the Tacoma Dome. Can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil wrestling fans who you saw back in the mid-'80s at the Tacoma Dome?
This would have been 1987, 88, and it was right there around the time of WrestleMania II and WrestleMania III. And I got to see Andre the Giant and Russell. And then I got to see Hulk Hogan, George the Animal Steel, the Hart Foundation with Jimmy Hart. Of course, Macho Man Randy Savage and Elizabeth, got to see all of them in the Tacoma Dome there. It was pretty cool.
Wow. Well, I remember back in right around that time, I went to my first pro wrestling event, and I remember seeing Hulk Hogan and the Big Boss Man, and of course the Big Boss Man handcuffed Hulk Hogan to the ring ropes.
Yeah.
And Hulk Hogan, of course, hulked up and got out of that. But yeah, I'm very much in awe that you saw Andre the Giant. How close were you to the action?
Well, you know, the Tacoma Dome's not that big, and we didn't have prime seats, but, you know, the first level of seats there is pretty close to the center. So they're pretty good seats. And just to kind of take you back, it was Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura were the commentators, and they sat in our row. They didn't sit down next to the ring like they did now. They sat up in the stands behind the table, and they were sitting to my left, right behind me. So I could hear the commentators talk while I was watching the matches, and it was pretty cool.
Wow. In your opinion, did Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura, they form one of the best announcing teams of all time.
Oh, one of the best. Yeah. Absolutely. And Mean Gene Okerlund. I mean, that was the day. His name is, I see his face, his name is kind of slipping my mind right now. The JR.
Oh, yes. Okay.
JR was great.
JR, yes.
Yeah. I mean, that was back when I don't know who, I don't really know who, the guys that they have doing it now, I think are trying to, but now wrestling, especially WWE, has gotten so corporate, it's just one long commercial about the WWE app and this app and, you know, go to this and, you know, they might mention something about the match that's happening right in front of them, but most of it's, you know, promoting something. So I usually just turn the volume down. Just try to watch the match.
Well, now, I take it you're not such a big fan of the Bella Twins?
Well, I'm a huge fan of the Bella Twins. I love looking at them.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right. Well, now, Mike, as you know, Jesse Ventura was a former Navy SEAL. A lot of your wrestlers did have military experience. Can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil fans a little bit more of what you did in the Army and your experiences at the Yakima firing range?
Well, we'd go to Yakima, or the Yak, about twice a year, and once in the fall and then once in the winter time, which I never understood. But we never really got to see the great town of Yakima or enjoy their apples, because they had us out on the range pretty much as soon as we drove out there. We're out on the range the whole time.
Okay.
Yeah, and we were part of a motorized thing. When the Humvee came out in the late 80s, to replace the M141 Jeep that had been around since the 60s. Everybody was excited about it. And it was a great platform, and it was a stable and rugged, and it didn't deflect bullets like on TV. I'm just letting you guys know that. It was made out of fiberglass. It was very lightweight, so it rode up on top of the mud. It was, you know, had the big GMC engine in it and the all-wheel drive, and it was a pretty cool vehicle. Well, from that, they decided to make a heavy division of motorized vehicles, kind of like a heavy armored division. They wanted a heavy motorized division. So all the equipment is on wheels. So we would have our howitzers were towed behind trucks, the big 198 howitzers that we had. All the infantry, instead of Bradley fighting vehicles, they had Humvees. And that was
kind of the thought process.
Yeah, behind the motorized division. Of course, we went to NTC every year and got our, because it was a horrible concept. It was absolutely atrocious concept. So it did not work. The 9th Infantry, I don't think, is even around anymore. But it was the 9th Infantry Division motorized.
Now, did the 9th Infantry Motorized Division have a nickname, like the Screaming Eagles?
You know, they did, but it's been so long, and I got to tell the truth. That's when I turned 21, when I was in Washington, so it's all kind of hazy to me the whole time I was there.
Oh, okay.
But
the
9th Infantry had a very long and distinguished history in Vietnam and in the Pacific Theater of World War II, along with the 24th Infantry Tropic Lightning, and the 25th Infantry, which are all stationed out in Hawaii and Guam. So they had their history was in the, they might have had a motto, but it wasn't anything, you know, there wasn't anything memorable where I remembered it.
Wow, all right.
But,
now, were you yourself stationed in Germany?
I was in Germany in the 3rd Armored Division, and that's who was deployed to Saudi Arabia 25 years ago to expel the Iraqi army out of Kuwait. I was part of that group that went over there 7th Corps with 2nd ACR, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd Armored Division. We're kind of in the middle,
wow.
middle thrust. Yeah. So, fought 2 battles. Got through that. It's quick and violent and loud.
Wow. Now, at this moment, I'm going to ask Sign Guy, who was it that we had on the radio that got shot in the leg? He was one of our guests, and he was there when Saddam Hussein's statue fell.
Brad Lehman.
Oh, yeah, Brad Lehman. Okay. Yes. I'd like to tell Mike that we had a Brad Lehman on the air, and he got shot in Iraq. And he saw Saddam Hussein's statue tip over or fall.
Oh, and they pulled it down?
Yes.
Yeah. That was in 2003, yes. 2004, yeah.
Yeah, Brad Lehman. Okay, I forgot about that.
The furthest we got into Iraq was about 22 miles. We got right outside of Basra. That's as far as we went, and we backed off.
Ooh,
kind of wish we'd
wow.
have kept going. But kind of wish we'd have kept going because they would have had a whole lot easier time. Basically decimated the entire army. They had nobody between us and Baghdad. We could have drove right up there and took it over.
Yeah, if you had done that, maybe things would have been different today than what's going on there with ISIS.
Maybe a little different. Yeah, well, I'm glad we didn't then, and we shouldn't have in 2003. We should have just stayed out and Saddam wasn't bothering anybody. He didn't have any, couldn't do anything, couldn't fly. His army was exposed as being very bad. It's a horrible army. So he was keeping all those factions in check. We could have just left him alone and that whole place would be stable.
Well, now, Mike,
but
speaking
I'm not
of the
in charge.
Army. Oh. Oh, okay. You left that to the colonels and generals. Okay.
Yeah, that was above my pay grade.
Wow. All right. Well, Mike, speaking of the Army, was one of your favorite wrestling characters growing up, Sergeant Slaughter?
You know, I really enjoyed the Sergeant Slaughter gimmick. I think it was well thought out. I think the guy, I don't know his real name. I apologize. I probably should know this, but the guy who portrayed Sergeant Slaughter, during the Iraqi conflict, of course, he turned heel, probably one of the greatest heel turns in wrestling history, in my opinion, when he came out and sided with the Iron Sheik, who is another great heel. If you're not following the Iron Sheik on Twitter, you're an idiot. He has some of the best tweets ever.
Yes, the Iron Sheik, yes. Now, Mike, in Texas...
But the Slaughter-Hulk Hogan match, I think it was WrestleMania 4,
uh-huh.
5, the Slaughter-Hulk Hogan main event was probably one of the best main events in WrestleMania, in my opinion.
Oh, wow, that's one of your favorites, huh?
Oh, yeah, with the whole Iraq thing, it was pretty cool. That's back
oh,
when
right.
they had really good writers for WWF. You know, When they had a sustained storyline, there wasn't the same thing over and over and over and over and over. I'm sorry.
That's fine. Now, can you tell us a little bit about your ring announcing work? I believe it's with Chasm Elite and Belts of Honorous.
Yeah, Belts of Honorious.
Honorious, yes.
Chasm Elite is out of Belton, Texas, a pro-am MMA.
Oh, okay.
Amateur mixed martial arts fighters that are trying to go pro and in the pros that fight professionally. So.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, now, as a ring announcer, have some of the wrestlers entered the ring and tried to involve you in a dance contest before the match even began?
No, but I have taken a few bumps from wrestlers. I think my most notable bump was when the American Psycho, Lance Hoyt, pushed me into a turnbuckle and grabbed my microphone. I was stepping in for a ring announcer who was having a feud with Lance for Inspire Pro, and did not say his name right. And, of course, they built a storyline around that with Lance. And if anybody's ever worked with Lance Hoyt, he is the absolute consummate of a professional. Probably one of the best wrestlers that he's had in his career. He's in promotions. He's humble. And he has great ideas. And if any up-and-coming wrestlers are out there, if you have a chance to be in a promotional Lance Hoyt, shut up. But he,
well, Mike,
they had a bit. They had a bit where he was coming out and he was wrestling Absolute Ricky Starks for the Inspire Pro belt, I believe. And he came out and attacked Ricky on the way to the ring, and then came in and I took it. That's my most notable bump, and he did it right too. I sold it. He didn't hurt me at all. I really oversold it, but we had some fun with it. And I'm not a professional wrestler. I don't know. I didn't train at all, so I just kind of fell down and tried to make it look like I would look like somebody that got hit, you know. The only other bump I took was from Austin Rhodes. He's a nephew of Dusty Rhodes, and we were doing a thing in the ring, and without really telling me beforehand, he slapped me. And it took me a second to sell it because I didn't expect it.
Oh.
So I kind of had, it was kind of a fake reaction, which made it even funnier. And the crowd liked it even more because there was like a delayed reaction.
Oh,
yeah,
wow. That sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, I've taken some bumps. Nothing bad, though. Nothing outrageous.
Oh, all right. Well, now can you tell us about some of the referees that you have come across, and what are some of the better ones in the organizations you have worked for, names that stand out as referees?
Well, you know, a lot of the guys that were referees in the indies that I worked were young. They were young and young kids just coming into the business. So, you know, I know them. I don't know their names off the top of my head because there's so many, and they're different. A lot of the promotions down here don't really understand the role of a referee in a professional match and how important it is, so they don't. Kind of like ring announcing at the indie level. If they can get their best friend to do it out of the front row, they do it just to save a buck. So it's kind of the same with the referee. You know, there's fans, guys that take it serious, but for the most part, got these young kids that are just entering professional wrestling as a official, and they're still green, but nobody of note that I can remember.
Well, now I've heard it said from several of our guests that the young wrestlers should pay attention, especially at seminars. If they go to a seminar, like wrestlers starting out, they should be humble and pay attention to the wrestlers that have paved the way. They should also get in there and tear down the ring to begin their careers. Don't be afraid to set up the ring and the ring ropes. Do you agree that this should also apply to referees?
Oh, absolutely. If you're just even ring announcers, I tore down many, many a ring and carried it in and helped set it up. I think that's an important part of just the business itself. I mean, it's just an important part of the learning process. It shouldn't be looked at as manual labor that's beneath you. You know, you're putting the ring together. The ring is your stage. It's where you work. And to know the intimacy of it and know where the boards are placed and how they're placed and why, and to make sure the pads are down and everything's tied off, and the ropes are up and they're tight. I mean, it's, to me, a young wrestler needs to know how to put up and tear down a ring by himself with no help. And that should be a part of the training. And a lot of trainers do that. If you're a young rookie wrestler, that's one of the first things you do is put up the ring and tear it down before you even get in and do bumps.
Wow,
you know,
well
we had,
said.
We had Danny Cage on the show this Wednesday before a lightning strike knocked everything out for about 5 minutes. And I didn't get a chance to expand on this, but I've seen his post. Of course, Danny Cage is the director and head instructor and wrestling guru at the world-famous Monster Factory, which is one of the most renowned wrestling schools to go to. And he'll agree. I mean, the ring, at no point in your career should you ever think that's beneath the dignity of a wrestler. Because it's so much a part of you, and if you're part of a promotion in any capacity, even as a ring announcer, you know it's not beneath you, because you are part of the show. And our ring announcers don't. I mean, our art form is a lot of times not appreciated, especially at the indie level. But even, you know, going up through the ranks, you know, when you're out there, you're selling the show as a ring announcer. Your number one priority is to sell the show and to prepare that crowd for the wrestlers coming in, prepare everything. And then you hand it over to the wrestlers and they tell the story. It's kind of like a monologue to a movie. You're not the movie.
Yes.
And what I see is a lot of ring announcers are buddies. They're the promoter's friend, right? And they get up in there and make it all about them, and they got an audience, and people react, and it's intoxicating. But if you don't keep yourself in the right frame of mind, nobody paid a ticket to see the ring announcer, ever. In the history of any combative sport, Michael Buffer, Bruce Buffer, two of the best in the industry, nobody paid a ticket to go see them ring announce Muhammad Ali. Or ring announce UFC. Nobody came to see them. They came to see the fighters. So as an announcer, you know, you're part of that process, and part of that process is gaining the trust of the guys that you're putting over. And if they don't trust you, you're going to have a hard time putting them over. And I don't know any way better to build the trust between the actors in the drama, in the ring, is to be a part of picking up and tearing down the ring. And I've heard comments from wrestlers says, you know, I've never seen a ring announcer jump in there and put up a ring. I said, well, I got to stand in it too. I'm part
of
the show.
Wow. Very well said. Now, when the other wrestlers have seen you putting up the ring, that gives you a little bit of, how would you say, street cred in their eyes. Have they ever because of this, have you ever received an honorary knife edge chop from a wrestler?
No.
Oh.
No, I have not. And I did have a wrestler, Chaz Taylor, tell me once, says, you know, you got to get a chop to the chest. And I thought about it for a while and I came back and said, no, I don't. As a matter of fact, and he asked me why. He says, "Why didn't you know? I want to do it." And I said, "No, I didn't earn the right to get chopped in the chest. I haven't been to any training. I don't know how to take a bump. I'm a pro wrestler. That's reserved for wrestlers. That's a wrestling thing. That's not a ring announcing thing."
Okay.
If you want to get me, throw my mic out of the ring and make me go chase it. Now, that might be something. 20 years ago, maybe. 25 years ago, maybe. But not now. I'll be a part of the show, and I'll take a bump if I need to, if it's going to put over whatever the storyline is. But I'm not a wrestler, so I don't get afforded the same things a wrestler gets. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes. Yeah, that does. Okay. Well, out of all the wrestlers that you have seen in Texas. Oh, okay. Is it okay now?
Yeah, I think it went away.
Oh, okay.
It sounded like it sounded like Crazy Joe during a commercial break for a second.
Not Crazy Joe. Oh, my. Okay.
Little inside joke to the listening audience on the air. So we had a guy that during the commercial break. Sounds like he's playing hockey with his cell phone.
Yes, and that's
anyway,
what
were we asking, Dan? Go ahead.
That was going to lead into my next question. Can you tell us about your involvement with your podcast radio show, Armed Radio Global, how that came about?
Absolutely. Well, I started my podcasting and my broadcasting career with a company called Hutto FM, which is based out of my hometown in Texas, and we did sporting events. So I would do play-by-play and football, basketball, some baseball. And they had 24-hour music, but they didn't have anything else going on. So I approached them, can I do a talk show? And at the time, a buddy of mine, who is also a big sports guru, we got together and the show was called Montez and Allen, and we broadcast it out of my house. And then the Man Cave, which isn't anywhere near the Man Cave now, but that started it. And then John left. Couldn't do the show anymore, so I changed it to Out in Left Field with Mike Allen. And then Hutto FM decided they didn't want to do it anymore because I was a little, you know, a little too outside of their demographic that they were shooting for. So along came Joe Savino, and we played a game called World of Tanks online. And he wanted to have a radio station that we could put together so that when we were playing tanks online, we could listen to music and have it, you know, piped in through our TeamSpeak. So from that was born Armed Radio, and Armed Radio has grown now. Now it's 9 shows, I think, 9 shows all week long, and one of them is mine, and mine's the longest running one, the first one. And it runs Wednesday nights, 9 to midnight. It's called On the Air with Mike Allen. And if anybody's interested in looking into it, you can go to ontheairwithmikeallen.com. It's got all the links, the show links, and all the information about Armed Radio and all the different platforms we broadcast under. It's been going on 4 years now.
Yes, and Mike, what qualities does Blanche Magnolia Beauregard bring to Armed Radio Global?
Blanche Magnolia Beauregard brings class and panache. She brings grace and dignity to an otherwise train wreck of a show, mostly fueled by alcohol, sarcasm, and scrapping ourselves. And then Blanche comes in one segment, we all have to be civilized.
Yes, well, she graces the man cave with her with a sweet smelling perfume, and that sometimes.
Oh my God!
Yes,
she makes that whole place smell so good.
And she's the lover of mint juleps, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, mint juleps. Yep.
Wow, okay. All right. Now, Mike, was a pivotal moment in your show's history was when I first called in, and how long into the show was it before I mentioned transgender robots?
I would say that the addition of you and Crazy Joe Pardini has brought the show to its next level, that next chapter, and I think it was, I wrote it down, 2.8 seconds into introducing you. You actually interrupted me during your introduction to talk about your affinity for Japanese-made sex robots, yes.
Oh, okay.
You interrupted. See what you got here, sign guy? He's been awful quiet. Because you see who your co-host is, right?
Yeah,
what I have
yeah.
To deal. I know what you have to deal with. I know what you go through. I feel your pain.
We may have heard a couple of transgender wrestling robot stories on occasion here.
Well, Mike, you, of course, being in Texas, Texas has a rich history of famous wrestlers coming out of there. Now, I did a study of the Von Erich family, and here's a brief background of them. The Von Erichs are widely known when it comes to wrestling. The father of the family, Fritz Von Erich, had six sons. Kevin Von Erich is the second son of Fritz and the last surviving son. The majority of Kevin's career was spent working in the world-class championship wrestling, where he had feuds against such wrestlers as Chris Adams, the Fabulous Freebirds, and Ric Flair. David
Wahoo
Von
McDaniel.
Erich. What's that?
Wahoo McDaniel.
Oh, he did. Okay, Wahoo McDaniel. All right. Now, David Von Erich also worked in the world-class championship wrestling promotion, and he faced Harley Race and Ric Flair several times for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. And he also teamed with his brothers, Kevin and Kerry, against the Fabulous Freebirds. Now, David also wrestled in Missouri, and he won the Missouri Heavyweight Championship on a couple of occasions. Now, Kerry Von Erich was the fourth son of Fritz. He was born in Niagara Falls, New York, and was known as the Modern Day Warrior and the Texas Tornado. Among the major feuds...
I think Kerry was the only one that wrestled in the WWF.
I believe you're right, yes. I think Mike and David were pretty much... David in Missouri and the NWA and the WCCW, I think you're right. I think Kerry was the only one, you know, to wrestle there. And, you know, he went up against such, he had such major feuds against Gino Hernandez, Iceman Parsons, Chris Adams, and the Fabulous Freebirds. My question is, did you get a chance to watch Kerry growing up on television, Kerry Von Erich?
No. You know, I grew up in Michigan. I didn't grow up in Texas. So the wrestling I got was Vern Gagne in the All-Star Wrestling. AWA?
Okay.
Out of... So I grew up watching Vern Gagne, Hulk Hogan, Sergeant Slaughter, I think was AWWA, King Lawler, those guys. George Animal Steel was AWWA, I think. But that's who I watched on Saturday.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, so it'd be on. It would be playing on the PBS station would carry it, and it was the AWA.
Wow. Okay.
That's what I grew up watching. I didn't watch the WCCW until the 80s when it was carried on TBS.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Mike, on August 25th. What's that?
The American Dream, Dusty Rhodes.
Oh yeah.
He was my favorite, man. When he did the polka dot thing with the... Oh, my God. He's loved.
Wow. Well, now, I have my wrestling sources that say they would love to see you in polka dot shorts.
Well, then they would have to sneak in my bedroom, so I have a pair of polka dot silk jammies that I wore.
Oh, okay.
So I think if that fan was a willing female between the age 30 and 40, that might happen.
Oh, okay. 30 or 40, okay. Speaking of which, of all the female wrestlers that you have announced, who's the one lady you would most fear a knife edge chop from?
Bobby Hayden.
Wow, you say that without hesitation.
Barbie Hayden, she was the NWA Women's Champ for over a year. She's wrestling out of the Florida area right now, and you'll see her in the WWE system.
Wow, she's that good, huh? Okay.
She's good. She's good. She's she can make anybody look good. I've seen her matched up against some folks who probably shouldn't have been in a wrestling ring. And she's not the type to be, she's very sweet. And she loves the business. And I've seen her take just very good wrestlers and make them look phenomenal. And that's the testament to a good wrestler. A great wrestler could take me, put me in the ring, and put me over as probably the best wrestler he's ever wrestled against, with no training.
Wow. You know who also they said had those qualities? Triple H and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Yeah, and also HBK.
Oh,
Heartbreak
yes.
Kid.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, I watched the documentary, the Ric Flair documentary, when they wrestled in WrestleMania. It was Ric Flair's last match. And, you know, Ric at that time had been so beat up and broke down that, you know, he's talking to him before the match. He says, you know, I don't know what we're going to do. And, the name just slowed him out. The Heartbreak Kid. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Triple H's partner in DMX.
DMX?
Yeah. Ah, dang it. What's his name? Sign guy, help us out. We're struggling.
Are you thinking of
Shawn Michaels?
Xbox?
No, Shawn Michaels.
Shawn Michaels and... Are you thinking of Marty Jannetty?
No. I was talking about Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair. Ric Flair's final match in WrestleMania. And him and Shawn were wrestling. And Shawn called the entire match. And made Ric.
Yeah, WrestleMania 25.
Yep, that was Ric Flair's final match. And it was a retirement match. And that's the famous match where at the very end, before the patented kick, he looked over at Ric Flair and said, "I'm sorry, I love you," and then he planted him. But that whole match was Shawn Michaels. That whole match. If you go back and watch that match, that's one of the best matches I've ever seen because of the impact of it. And then afterwards, after Shawn Michaels won, he left the ring, which was unheard of. Usually the guy that wins stays in the ring, but he left Ric in the ring and left so that Ric could retire and have all the fans give him their final ovation and everything, and it was really cool. It was just a cool match. But in the documentary, Ric was saying, "I didn't do anything in that match." Shawn called the whole thing. He said, "Just do as I say, and I'll make you look good."
Wow.
He did, and that's a great wrestler. You know, the good wrestlers... to separate a good wrestler from a bad wrestler is a good wrestler will go in the ring and make that match no matter who it is. And he'll put a guy over and make him look great. And that's a great wrestler. Other guys are just in there taking bumps. In my opinion.
Wow, I've heard about that, yes.
In my opinion. I mean, Shawn Michaels,
okay.
Triple H, all those guys could take me or you and put you in tights and put you in that ring with no training and make us look like heroes. And that's a great wrestler. Not that they
Ooh.
Should. Nor do I encourage that. I'm just making the point that that's what separates some of these guys that are struggling in the indies. And they're like, "Well, you know, I can't make it to the next level. I don't know what I'm doing wrong." Well, what you're doing wrong is you're going in thinking it's all about you, and it's not. It's all about the story. It's all about telling a story and then having that story and drawing the audience into your story and then adjusting the story to meet the audience.
Oh, okay. That's well said.
It wasn't these little 10-minute matches. It, you know, Ric Flair and just to get get in that ring, and whoever he was wrestling, he wrestled for an entire hour. Can you imagine keeping an audience enthralled in a match for an hour?
Wow. Yeah, they used to do that back in the 40s and 50s. Yes.
No, all the way up to the 80s. Stone Cold Steve Austin. Stone Cold Steve Austin, in his documentary, when he was coming up, and he was coming through Gulf Coast Wrestling and Georgia Wrestling and through the WCCW, that he used to sit in the back and watch these guys go for a straight hour, and it was the most entertaining wrestling he's ever seen.
Wow.
And nowadays, they're out there, and they go, what, 15, 20 minutes? They went to the main event on Monday night. They start the main event on Monday night about 5 till, and they ended at 3 after. I mean, what is that? So, the rest of the time, they're talking about download the app.
Yes.
I
wonder how long I could wrestle Crazy Joe.
Two would last maybe 1 minute.
Oh, come on.
Dude, first of all, it would take you at least an hour to get into the ring because Crazy Joe would come up with about 20 million ideas.
Yes.
And he'd interrupt you. Then once you got in
and
the
then
ring.
He tried to...
You should have Crazy Joe on the show.
He tried to take the microphone from the ring announcer, and then he asked, I've got a question for you. That's what he do.
I got a question for you. Right in the middle of a bit. Hey, Mike.
Yes.
What, Joe? I got a question for you. I said, is it pertaining to anything we're talking about? No, listen.
No.
I got an idea. I had to hang up on him this last show because he wouldn't settle down.
Oh.
I think he gets in his moods. I think he gets in his moods, and he's a good kid, though. I like him.
Now, you see what happens when I'm not there to calm him down?
I know. You left me hanging,
yes.
Dude. So I got stuff to do. I'm going over here. But you're not coming on the show? No, I got things. What? You know, things.
Yes. All right, well, Mike, we actually don't have trivia questions on Turnbuckle Turmoil, but we do have a trivia question this week, and that is, adorable Adrian Adonis had a finishing move, famous finishing move. Of these four choices, what is the correct finishing move of Adrian Adonis? Is it the bonsai drop, the reverse pile driver, the school girl roll up, or goodnight Irene?
I'm going to say B.
Oh, but the bonsai drop?
No. Bonsai drop is A, wasn't it?
I think so, yes. You're thinking of the reverse pile driver.
Yes.
No, that's wrong. That was Don Morocco's finishing move. The bonsai drop was Mr. Fuji's finishing move.
Yeah, I knew that was Fuji's.
The school girl roll-up belonged to the Fabulous Moolah. It was Goodnight Irene.
Oh, really? I thought that was the guy off of the brothers that are on WWE. No, that's Sweet Cousin something.
Oh.
The one that the Wyatt brother does.
Oh, okay. Oh, well,
wow.
Good
night, Irene.
Yes, good night, Irene. Yeah, okay. All right. Well, that's fine. All right. Well, Mike, on August 25th, 1985, Barry Windham and Mike Rotundo faced a new duo managed by a luscious Johnny Valiant. Things got out of control when Greg Valentine pinned Barry Windham after Beefcake stuck Valiant's lit cigarette in Windham's eye. Are you aware of the fact that Beefcake was inspired by the Three Stooges eye poking to try this on Windham?
I didn't know that.
I was working, yeah.
Yes. Nice.
Yes. Okay. I was up to shenanigans. Okay. Well, now, Mike, Tito Santana and Rick Martel, known as the Strike Force, came out of nowhere. Each man knew what it took to be a successful tag team. Their 5 months reign began when Martel got the anvil to submit while locked up in his Boston Crab. Are you yourself a big fan of crab cakes from Boston? That's what I'm trying to ask.
Hey, sign guy?
Yeah.
What the hell is he talking about?
I believe he started with a trivia question on Strike Force and then segued into where you most like crab cakes.
Yes.
So like me, you have very little control over West Coast Dan when he's on your show.
I believe that is confirmed.
You know, I've never put any thought into that, Dan, so I have no idea.
Oh, okay. Well, man, put it, I know that silence can be golden on podcasts, you know. Yes.
Night of the Dead Air, right?
Yes. It's quite opposite when Crazy Joe is on there. Yes.
Yeah.
Although he's gotten better. He's gotten more.
He has gotten better. Yeah. Well, I had a little talk with him, and I said, look, you know, you can't try to fill every second. Sometimes, you know, you got to stick with what's being talked about. But he does keep me on my toes, that's for sure.
All right. Well, Sign, do you have any questions for Mike? I know we're getting down toward the end of the show.
I do have a couple. Now, the first one I'm curious about, Mike, of all the venues you've been to for ring announcing, what's your favorite venue to be in for a show?
My favorite venue actually didn't involve pro wrestling. It involved mixed martial arts, and it was the Bell County Expo Center. That was the best. We had a green room. I had my own dressing room with amenities and a shower. And there was a big dome, and there was AC. That was the best. I think the worst was the ring announcing for Texas Wrestling Federation in a old gym with no AC in the middle of August.
I bet the promoter got a great deal on the venue there.
I think he did, and knowing Jimmy Perez, I'm sure it was a very good deal, but it was brutal.
How many fans would show up to a Gold's Gym, un-air-conditioned, in the middle of August, in the state of Texas?
The smallest amount of fans I've rang announced in front of was for Jimmy, and it was 10. And the largest amount of fans that I've rang announced in front of was for Premier Combat Group out of San Antonio, and there was 5,000. So you have two
out
different
of the 10 people that were there, how many of them were comps and or family members?
Jimmy didn't let anybody comp. Everybody paid. Everybody paid a ticket. Yeah, he's the consummate showman. Jimmy Perez of the Texas Wrestling Federation, his goal was to take every cash out of everybody's pocket before they left, and he was very good at it. And El Latino out of San Antonio and his brother Limas Dos were the creative behind the wrestling, and they did a great job. It was actually kind of fun. Jimmy's kind of hard to deal with personally, but he put on a decent show. I mean, that one show we had 10 people, I think it was because it was so hot. But his crowds averaged 200 to 300. Easy.
As the ring announcer, I'm sure you've seen your share of injuries take place in the ring. When someone does get hurt and they have to stop the match or stop the show for several minutes to tend to the injury, as a ring announcer, what are you trying to do at that point when there's an unexpected delay?
Well, I've never had anybody get hurt to the point where the show stops. I've never seen that. I've seen people spring a leak. One of the best at springing a leak was Austin Rhodes. Every time he'd wrestle Raven, they'd both bloody mess. But as far as an injury where you'd have to stop the show and get medical attention, I've never seen. However, some of the cells were so good, I thought we had an injury. And then come to find out it was all a work. But I had some guys that really knew how to sell it. Carson can sell his knee. He'd get a knee injury. And it was, well, he actually did get a knee injury, but he would sell that. He milked that for a year. He'd get in matches and he'd land on it. He'd sell it. If you think he was really hurt, and then he'd be in the back, it's like, you know, I was like, you know, it was work, right? Like, damn, dude. You got me all worried, getting ice from the concession stand. And he goes, no, it works good. It worked good. You did good. And I was like, dude, give me a wink or something. But I've never seen anybody get hurt to the point where they have to get medical attention.
I recommend trying to keep it that way because it's not the best of days at the office when it happens.
Yeah. And most of these indie promotions down here aren't prepared for anything like that, so.
Well, we have just a couple of minutes left on the show, so I will give that time to you if there's anything you'd like to say to the listeners, plug and promote anything and everything you got, upcoming appearances, your podcast, your favorite ice cream shop, anything at all that you would like. The floor is all yours.
Well, I thank you for coming on. Thank you for coming on. I would say that. Thank you for having me on. It was a pleasure. I'm honored to have been a part of your show. And, you know, it's a lot of work goes into these podcasts. I know just for 3 hours a week, it seems every day I'm doing something. I'm digging up something or I'm doing research or I'm trying to get guests. So I appreciate the work you put into it. And I also appreciate you putting up with Dan. I know that takes a special person.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. But on the air with MikeAllen.com, on the air with MikeAllen.com is the webpage. It has all our show times and all the links to all the shows on Armed Radio Global. Like I said, we have about 9 shows and 9 podcasts running in music 24 hours a day. So you can go there and find a link to it. And plus, all my old shows are all archived there if you'd like to listen for Dan and Crazy Joe. I broadcast live every Wednesday, 9 to midnight Central Standard Time. And the next time I'll be in the ring announcing will be for Belts of Honorius. It'll be in June. No, July. It'll be in July. And we have two venues that we're narrowing it down. And as soon as we get Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation approval, we'll be setting out a date and starting to sell tickets for that. That'll be Pro-Am. That'll be a Pro-Am. So we'll have at least 50% of the card will be amateur and 50% of the card will be pro.
All right. Well, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to be on our show. We enjoyed having you. We'll have to do this again at some point in the future. And best of luck to you. Hopefully you don't see any injuries that stop a show when you're ring announcing. So once again, fans, if you get the chance, go see a Pro-Am show or a pro wrestling show where Mike Allen's ring announcing. Lots of stuff going on in Texas, I know. Very busy scene down there for both MMA and pro wrestling. We will be back with you Sunday afternoon. We have International Day on Turnbuckle Turmoil. Guests from many different foreign countries that have relocated to the United States in search of wrestling glory. Should be an interesting experience, and we will talk to you then.
Yes.